welcome to The Runs, the podcast in which we discuss runs of comic books. I'm your host, Ryan Alexander Tanner. This week, I'll be talking with comics artist Zena Lopez about Pink by Kyoko Okazaki, which I may or may not have pronounced terribly, but I'm an aging white man, so it's to be expected. Anyway, now that I've won over the whole audience, I'll introduce first Zena, our guest. I'll do a little intro for you. You can tell me what I left out or said wrong. Zena Lopez is a Chicago-based cartoonist and painter. She worked on the graphic novel adaptation of Holler If You Hear Me, which is Greg Michie's teacher memoir for Teachers College Press. That's Columbia University's academic press. More recently, she created a comic called Thanks for Listening, which is a great memoir comic. Distributed by Silver Sprocket. So those of you who haven't ordered it through Silver Sprocket, get on it. She is an up-and-coming comics creator. I think you'll say you remembered her when. How's that sound?
Good.
Did I leave anything out?
No.
Okay, that's your whole life summarized.
Yeah.
All right. Good start.
Feels good to hear it.
Yeah. Right. It's. So Pink, we'll be talking about Pink today. We'll get into the why in a minute, but just for a little context. So it's a manga series. We've done a couple manga series on the show. It came out in 1989. It's 20 parts, chapters. We're going to do the first half this time. And if once this is so well received, we'll do the next half in a later show. So we're doing the first 10 parts. It was originally published in English in 2013. This was the artist Kyoko Okazaki's. This is her breakout series. She's also a fashion illustrator, which I think is pretty evident in the work. I'd say there's an element of fashion in the work. Is there anything else, any other context to the series you'd like to add?
So it being a series means like how many chapters are in there? Because it's more than one, it's a series. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely fashionable, and all the women in here are like super sexy. I don't know what else to say about it. I really like her her element of humor.
Yeah, we'll get into the specifics. Yeah. This is like the Wikipedia entry. You chose this series. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But first, so I've known you for what, about 5 years now, I think? But not very well. But so we worked together on the aforementioned Holler If You Hear Me book. So I did a book for Teachers College Press like a long time ago now, 15 years ago. I did the To Teach book. And then I got asked to come in and work on a second book. And it was another teacher memoir. But instead of having one artist do the whole thing, they said, let's get a bunch of artists. So you were one of the artists who was selected for that book. And how did that come about for you?
My high school teacher, Dan Estep, recommended that I try out for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had nothing going on after high school. He just messaged me. I was like, absolutely, I have nothing else to do. And it felt really cool coming into that. Like, I remember I was late to the first meeting. So the only chair that was left was like the most dominant chair of the table, which means he had to rule, which is all the way at the end. So I was like, all right, I have to really take this one with pride, being late and all. We had like pizza. I was just really excited to be there, but it was Dan who got me on. Shout out to Dan.
Shout out to Dan. He got you an incredible life-changing opportunity. No, and it's funny, like there's the two positions, like you're a young artist trying to get a gig, and then I was on the other end of it, of like, we got to find 10 artists to work on this thing. And which is surprisingly hard to do, to go, let's get like 10, getting 10 artists to come work on a project, you know, and like getting it to work out is really hard. I was sort of the editor of that project. It was kind of a lot of wrangling of people, but I was so happy with how a lot of the artists turned out. I mean, I wasn't unhappy with anyone. But you kind of stood out to me, like your style, you just have a really distinct kind of weird style, but it works really well. It's like very much a person's sensibility. So I definitely noticed what you were doing. And then you made me nervous throughout the process too, because you got it all done right at the end. And I had never worked with you before. So that's always a big concern, is like, is this person going to finish it? And will they finish it on time? And I didn't have any prior experience with you to tell me whether or not that would work out. But then I think you ended up getting it done a couple days early, actually. But you kind of did the whole thing right at the end.
Yeah, I work in mysterious ways. I wasn't going to tell you anything I was doing along the way. But I was working, okay? And secretly, I work better under pressure. So as the deadline approached, I was like, I do this thing where I end up staying like in the studio for 16 hours at a time. And I feel it in my back. Yeah. And I'm just, what keeps me awake and what keeps me going is the fear that it's not going to get done. And then I'm going to stay in the same position forever and die.
All right. I'll remember that one. I do that. I like to work really long stretches too, which I can't really do as much anymore with a kid, but it's sort of hard to get people. I feel like if you've done 10 hours at the table, then it's pretty easy to just do like five more hours, you know? I feel like the first 2 or 3 hours are hard to get through, and then you kind of get into this thing, and then by the end, it's hard to stop. Like if you've been in there a long time, you know?
Yeah, because you're in the zone.
Yeah. But, and then you said a thing that I always remember, and we did a release party in Chicago, and there were some hoity-toities there, you know, some, I'd say a lot of the fancier people I know are kind of people in Chicago related to that book. And we had a release party and they said, you know, young artists, like, how do you feel? And you were like, I just want more. Like you got a taste of getting a book out and getting an audience. And that was very inspiring to a lot of us, like aging creatives who kind of remembered like, oh, I want to tap into that feeling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I honestly, the great incentive was like the free pizza we had on the first meeting.
That's why I was there too. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone was like, hey, pizza's delivered. And I said, what? And I'm like dancing over to the table. Yeah. And then it happened again with the release party. There was like hors d'oeuvres and stuff for me to eat, which is very, very interesting for me. I love how free food tastes. It's always better.
Yeah, this is why we got along, because I mean, Bill Ayers was one of the people who organized that project, and he's always very, very amused at my food upset. I was the reason we had the free pizza at the first. I was like, we got to get deep dish pizza, Bill, because in Chicago you get deep dish pizza. And
what a good excuse. I would say the same shit, dude.
we have a synergy there. But anyway, and then I've just kind of followed what you're doing a little bit. Like you sent me, I think, a draft of the Thanks for Listening comic. And I was so happy to see that you were working on more stuff and just like a desire to make more things. And I always feel like I wish I'd had more kind of guidance or support coming up. And so I try to offer that when I can. And you're a person whose work I've really noticed kind of coming along. And I just think you're doing something, like it's unique, and there's a quality to it. There's an energy to it. So I'm excited to see what you continue to make. Anyway, I guess let's get into the comic book now. So you picked, I mean, the guest always picks the series, I think, but this was a case where I hadn't even heard of this comic book. So that's my context for it, is you suggested it. And I was like, all right, I'll read that. I'll check it out. So you tell me your context with this series.
I found this like in high school. And I just really liked her like airiness of things. I liked how silly the book is and how they curse a lot and things just keep moving really quickly. It's not cringy where you kind of just dwell on someone's sadness. They're very fast about moving forward from problems. I don't know. I also happen to like Eric Andre, if that means anything, because he's just such a quick comedian. I don't have any brain cells left for anything that's too intense. So when I was reading this, it was just very comforting and silly. and I was considering being a sugar baby back then, but it just seemed more of like a curious, fun thing to do. I wasn't really one yet, but she is a sugar baby. Or she calls it a call girl. So, yeah, no, as I'm reading this today, like, I find a lot more things are relatable now. And it's really weird how I happen to find things that are so attuned to me. Yeah. You even said, like, if I'm writing this new book, right? Because you were like, I'm really interested in, thanks for listening, because you talked about being a sugar baby. And you don't really read about that a lot. Well, this is one book that had it, right? And you were like, well, go do, you were like, go do some research, go read about like other girls who have done this, find out where you are in this world, and then see if you could talk about it some more because it's interesting.
Well, so you're referencing a lot of things.
I know, I went everywhere with that.
Well, so you shared Thanks for Listening with Me, which is a memoir comic you did, which I think is very good. And I also think it's like eight memoirs worth of memoir. That was kind of my takeaway. It was like, it was a very dense range of experiences. So that was kind of my note for you afterwards, was like, you could kind of decompress this and you could focus on different pieces of this, and you could make a really large body of work out of that. And so I think there's a number of areas you could focus on of your life experience. But the one about, yeah, your experience being a sugar baby was, I guess, more unexpected or something I hadn't seen as many examples of. And it wasn't really gone into very in depth in the, and it was sort of casually like among a bunch of other things. So I was like, oh, I want to hear more about this experience. And I didn't know when I invited you on this podcast that we would do a comic related to that topic. So it just came up. But so you're saying you read this initially in high school, which was what, like 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And then and then it ended up related. So rereading this for the show, it is now more closely related to your life experience than it had been at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess as we go through it, I guess we'll talk more about those experiences and how they relate. But is there anything else kind of overview that you want to share before we get into the individual chapters of this?
Yeah. So like her being a sex worker is just kind of brushed over as well. It's just what she does. Mm-hmm. And she also mentions like her mom's death. Is that part of chapters 1 through 10, or is that later?
I think it's in there because it gets into her family that she has a dad and a stepmom. And there's a thing of sort of like glorifying the mom, right? Doesn't she kind of remember her mom fondly?
Yes. She's a little bit odd. Like she was thinking of her mom and then just started touching herself, which is very odd to me. I also like that she's just a weird girl.
Yes, I would definitely. You're a unique human. Yeah, I would say
she has like she has a pet crocodile.
Yeah, that's a big catalyst for the story, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the other one I remember just while we're relating to go back a step is we had, I think it was our second meeting with you. It was the first one-on-one meeting. When we were working on the book, it was me and Greg Michie, the author, and we met somewhere up with you and you were late again. And you were like, oh, I just got hit by a car. And like, it was
I sure did.
It was both like, oh, I'm concerned for you. You got hit by, and also like, I feel like this is your world. Like, I feel like you're always going to be late and something just happened is like a little bit of how you operate in the world. So I'm just saying it's created an impression.
It's true. Hey, well, you know what? It was actually a very good excuse. In fact, when we sat down, I was like, and by the way, it was a BMW. Greg is just sitting there like, oh my God. And then you and I just both high five, like, yeah, I get that money. You know?
Yeah. Well, we're both artists. Yeah. We're both working artists. So if you're going to get hit by a car, get hit by a BMW. That's the, I took that class in college too.
I'll do it again.
Yeah. Do you want to get into the series or do you want to say anything else before we?
No, I'm ready now. I just thought it was kind of cool to talk about her mom's death and how she was just so aloof about it. Like she just really carries on from really horrible disparities. and I don't know how to process my own. I do it in like comic books. And if you just see me gliding over it, maybe in a way I'm almost kind of like this kid, this girl. So I don't know. I just thought that was sort of interesting to note on. And I don't have any other commentary besides just observing it.
Yeah. I mean, I also would say like in relation to your other memoir you did. I mean, I always say like, you don't have to listen to me at all. Like you're asking for my opinion or whatever is my two cents. But there were just so many, such a wide range of experiences in there, you know, that I still think that regardless of what you focus on, like decompressing that experience. And it seems like you have a really interesting life story. A lot of people are doing memoir, you know, and it's sort of like, well, what actually happened that you want to talk about? You know, like when I was coming up, every memoir comic was just like some white guy, like, oh, I play video games all the time. Or, you know, or I don't know if you ever look at like Hourly Comics Day, people do it on Instagram. And it's always like, I'm sitting in my office drawing an hourly comic. And that's your whole life, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm in parenting stuff now, which kind of is interesting, but like my life's pretty mundane too, I would say. So I would say that you seem to have a life experience that has value in sharing. Like the quality of the work is good and also the story itself is interesting. So that's been a lot of why I've been trying to encourage you.
Yeah, well, you know, they say it's all about perspective. Maybe you should be shorter. Try that.
I should be shorter?
Yeah.
Like physically not as tall? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Shave off your knees. You never know what could happen. Maybe your life could change.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Are you saying because I'm tall?
Yeah. That's why your life is bad.
I'm not saying my life is bad. I'm just saying.
I'm kidding.
I don't understand.
I have a really bad sense of
humor. That's what we're establishing, is you have a bad sense of humor, because I don't even know what that means. I am pretty tall, though. I'm a tall person. I'm taller than, I don't know, I'm in the upper percentage or whatever. So
it was a joke about perspective, and if you didn't get it, then maybe I'm gonna brush up on. Yeah.
But isn't being taller giving me a broader perspective?
Yes.
Let's keep unpacking this joke. It was a really good joke. So let's keep examining. And so Pink, chapter one. So or just
Pink chapter one. Got it.
Pink chapter one. Just as an overview, maybe before we get into the because I've done different ones of these and I have a range of reactions, but I really liked this. I'm really glad it's really fun for me when I read something I've never read before and it's like, I never even heard of this and I'm so glad to have discovered this. So this is a cool one for me. This is like, and stylistically it's weird. It is kind of airy and disjointed a little bit. Like it doesn't seem like there was a story outline written or anything. It seems a little freeform and it's got its own kind of logic and vibe to it. And I really like this loose artwork. It's like kind of quick pen drawings, kind of impressionistic a little bit. And the screen tones kind of set strategically, but not super clean. I like the whole vibe of it. Like I got into the kind of mental world of this pretty easily.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's easy to get into. She's not like too complex. So that's why it's probably so easy to relate to her.
Well, there's undercurrent, though, you know, I feel like there's subtext. Do you feel like your drawing style was influenced by this all? Because you have a pretty kind of loose, and you have that thin line, too.
if I was inspired by this, then I'd say it's, like, inspired me to know that you can make a story without putting too much detail into a drawing. Like, I don't know if you've ever read JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
I've heard of it.
Or Berserk, maybe?
Heard of it, yeah.
Okay. Well, they're just like really detailed. Every single drawing is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to do that in order to make a book. So I think I got that from that book, from this book.
Yeah, there's a looseness to it. It looks really good, though, too. Like, I really like the visuals in this a lot.
Yeah. It's clean and it's easy to follow. I think that like a lot of the story is so snappy, and she's so violent sometimes that you just kind of follow through so quickly with how she feels. She's like emotionally unchecked.
So we start with she's talking to someone, I'm not sure, but essentially the opening is talking about pets, right? And she has a pet alligator is like the, well, before we get to that, actually, she's sort of somewhere that's not very important. Like she's talking about different pets. And then,
yeah, I think she's at her workplace and she's with a bunch of other call girls in a room, and her pimp calls her out to the hotel where she needs to meet her client.
Oh, I get it. So she's being photographed. She's lifting her top is like the opening image. And that's part of her getting work process, I guess, right?
Maybe so.
So she's
like before you open this book, it's the author's trying to tell you like, this is what you're going to get into.
Yeah.
This is not like an innocent book. The girl you're about to read, she's like raunchy as hell and she's childish and it's muddy. So be ready and be prepared to have that kind of story.
Right. And each chapter starts with an image that sort of thematically is related, but isn't necessarily like in the story. So that's true. But so it doesn't tell us that's who she's talking to. She's talking to, that's the term we'll use as call girl. That feel okay.
Yeah. They say it in the book.
Okay.
I say sugar baby, because that's maybe what I'm used to. Call girl is probably the right term because she has a pimp.
Does she? This guy is
kind of, maybe so, because like he's on the phone and telling her go to the Shinjuku Prince Hotel.
Okay. You know? All right. Yeah, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you feeling pretty? You're pretty open talking about your own experience.
Yeah, yeah. As a sugar baby, you're just sort of like you have a relationship with someone. You don't have a pimp.
No.
You just. Like what, you know, on your own phone, talking to them as individuals.
But is it like how do you meet clients?
Like a dating website. And
like a standard dating website or like it's unique?
It's unique.
Okay. It's not like OkCupid and then you're like, oh, by the way.
No.
Okay.
No. It's OkCupid specifically for sugar daddies and sugar babies.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah, but not using that website. I'm just being vague right now.
Okay, that's all right. But so she's going to the appointment, right? And then we see the date she's having.
Yes. She stops to get like some flowers along the way, which makes her late.
Uh-huh.
Oh man, that's ringing some bells.
Yeah.
I didn't even make that connection, honestly. I didn't think that I was such a late person until you mentioned it.
I didn't either.
Wow. But you know what? That's just her. Pretty much like me too.
Yeah, and I knew you were a late person, but I didn't make the connection between the character. And then
think that's just funny and coincidental.
Yeah, but so how did you read these well the first date is sort of inconsequential, right? Other than that, he's talking about her age and tells her to go. Oh, she's having an internal process, like he's lecturing her and telling her that she should grow up and marry a guy or whatever. Like, how did you respond to all that stuff?
I was like, I would probably feel the exact way that she does, because afterwards she's on the train and she's looking at other people like, I wonder if they know that I'm a call girl. Mm-hmm. Or what is it? She says, I bet no one who sees me on this train thinks I'm in the pussy trade. Weird. Mm-hmm. And then she starts looking around at others and then judging them on their appearance. And after like saying like a couple of mean things about others internally, she's like, know your place to all those other girls. Like as if I'm higher than you. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, no, no, no. What a sign of poor mental health to judge other people. I'm so jaded. And I, God, do I relate to that? I'm not perfect. So yes, I've been there before, but, and she then quickly remembers, and it's just so interesting to see how she bounces back. And she's like, well, that guy at the flower shop was nice. And she just kind of remembers the sweetness of that guy because he gave her 5 free roses since she was pretty. I thought that was kind of cute because it's like, oh my God. Yeah. One simple thing in a day can really change your experience. It mends all the rest.
And also kind of the range of like this harsh judgment and then trying to find a more positive outlook from that place. And then, so she has this pet alligator, which is never really, it's always just treated like a, just like something someone would do. That's like the weirdest part of this whole story is her pet alligator, I would say.
Yeah, why? Why do you think so?
Well, because that's not really a real thing, right?
No.
It's all sort of grounded. I mean, it's a story, so it's got these characters that come together in these ways that might not be totally realistic, but it's, and it's done very matter-of-factly. No one's like surprised she has it or... And then also the alligator was wearing these little glasses too.
Yeah. I think that's because the artist didn't know how to draw crocodiles. Like she explicitly says, like, I didn't know how to draw a crocodile.
Yeah, I was bad at drawing the croc. Yeah. It's these cool loose drawings, but it's just funny. And then her financial needs are in large part coming from having to feed this alligator.
Yeah.
So that's the, I guess it's like a very human relatable story. And then it's got this alligator in it. It's sort of, it's like got this weird additional element that sort of like throws you a little bit.
Yeah.
But I like that about it.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's like her only weapon. Like if you doubt, what's her name? Damn.
I don't know. And I was in my notes. I was like, do we ever actually even learn this character's name? I feel like they don't really bother with anyone's names in this. I'm also bad with names.
Yumi.
Yumi. Okay. Yumi. I'm going to write that down because there we go. But so the first chapter is sort of just like a little portrait of her, right? Because then it's like her internal monologue and then she just goes to sleep at the end. So it just gives you a little intro to her and her world and circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah. And she just like likes pretty things. She maintains her own little house. She could, I think that she could honestly just get money from her dad to sustain, but she really resents, I think, her father and the, like, I think if you can just read between the lines, especially after rereading this book now, she obviously hates this woman who replaced her mom.
Yeah.
And her mom also killed herself. So I think the way that she's just like rushing over all these horrible events and the person that she's today, which is just so aloof and airy and just likes pretty things. She's just like had a pretty like kind of fucked up life, you know?
Yeah. So she in the second one, she meets with her stepmom. And they have not a great dynamic. And then, but she's getting money from her stepmom. So there is an interesting element of like, she has access to money there because she has a day job and a second job and she's getting money from her dad. Does it say that her mom killed herself? Did I miss that? Or is that something you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's not in chapters 10, that's later.
Oh, sorry. I see. Okay. I haven't read the rest. Well, now I won't bother to read the rest. That's fine. So then we see her day job. She does some sort of like, it's like accounting or something. It's like, she's figuring out some, it's like an office job, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she has a sister, a stepsister, the daughter of her stepmother, who I think is really young, right?
Yeah.
And then,
comic relief.
Yeah, and then she brings a poodle and they feed the poodle to the alligator, which I think is a very controversial moment.
Yeah. They do. It goes crunch.
Yeah, that's one of those things where if you can get on board for this sort of irreverence, I guess it's not a big deal, but I can see that being a deal breaker for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of just establishing, it's just deepening the character, right? It's saying she's got a stepmom and a stepsister, and it's just sort of rounding it out a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And then she's doing these expense reports in the evening too. Like, she's just got a lot going on.
Yeah, because she wasn't able to finish them at work. And she's like, oh my God, my boss is going to scream at me if I don't finish them. But then she stalls. She hangs out with her sister. She watches TV. She does all this other stuff and then eventually gets to the work later, which is kind of like me. Because, man, do I know what that's like. Just leave stuff off for the end of the day. And this is a really interesting thing too. She's talking about her mom and she's like, she was so pretty and kind. She was almost like a child. And she always used to say, girls have to be neat and clean and proper at all times. And her little sister is like, what does that mean? I'm not actually really sure. Standing in her pajamas and just like next to her crocodile.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got like this really sweet adoration for her mom, but she's not like that, you know. I think she's just claimed this really rogue personality, and she's trying to exist happily while being there. But it's like, how do you do that? You've got like a lot of despair going on.
Well, that's kind of the question. Interesting.
Yeah. It, like, how does she do it? And you're just kind of observing how she does it. She's just so like, oh, I don't know. And it's very interesting to just see how she does it. I don't fucking know what else to say. She's just a really cool, interesting character.
Yeah, no, it's good. And it's a lot under the surface too, right? It's sort of like,
yeah,
presents these things. I always prefer when things kind of don't tell you how to feel, you know, they just kind of present it to you and let you feel it or interpret it your own way. And I think this does that really well.
Yeah.
So then chapter 3, we meet this young fellow, right? And then the stepmom has like a kept young man.
Yeah. He's her sugar baby.
Yeah. And so that's, and then, so then they have it. The way that sex is drawn in this is really interesting to me too. It's sort of like cropped, like you see little pieces of it and you see the afterwards. Like, I don't know. I thought that was an interesting stylistic approach.
Yeah. And he's like a Haruo is the guy's name. Haruo, I guess. Uh-huh. He's so sad. Everything he does is like so dark.
He's a tortured character a little bit.
He is. He really is. He's like, he's eating out the old lady, the stepmom. And he's like, is there no virgin territory left in this world? I doubt that's the case. Like, dude, get over yourself. This is your job. You've signed up for it. But it's so funny because he's just so silly because of that.
That's a good phrase, yeah. Too. He's eating out the old lady. That's a, it's not a euphemism. It just is what it is. But sounds like gotta go, friends. I gotta go eat out the old lady. You know, it's like, see you next time.
Oh man, have I been there? I'm just kidding.
Well, we all have. Oh, man. Then we see another one of her dates, and then this is interesting. So then she's just this guy just pays her to take photos of her tied up.
Yeah. And then she's just like, wow, 200,000 yen, lucky me. And she's just like so happy to have all that money.
Yeah.
And she's like, thank you, God. I thought that's so silly. There's like two mentions about Jesus in this comic, and they're both so silly. That's one of the first ones.
We'll keep it out for the second one. Do you have anything to say about that? Are there like a range of types of dates? Like, does that seem like, oh yeah, sometimes you have sex with someone or sometimes you get paid to wear certain clothes and be photographed? Like,
that's interesting. Yeah, I guess like a relationship is really more of an agreement and it's not contractual. It's like verbally contractual, right? But it all depends on like the person that you're with. Like, I was with this politician, and I remember he was just like, wow, you know, you're like a mix of different things. It's so exotic. And so the whole time when I was with this man, I was just like in his really incredible like apartment in downtown. Uh-huh. And I'm staring at like Navy Pier from the window, and I'm like, I'm just going to stay quiet because this motherfucker is doing all the talking for me. I'm just going to be mysterious and hot and stand over here in like a dress. Uh-huh. And then I get my money, and that's it. So, yeah, I mean, you don't really, it really also depends on who you are. I didn't really have outfits at the time when I was doing like sugar dating back in when I was like 19, 20 or anything like that. Like I was just kind of showing up in whatever I thought would look hot, like a dress or something. And then I would just let them do all the fawning over me. And then I would hang out with them, have some dinner. Sometimes it's so easy. it's just like, how does this look in me? And I'm like trying on clothes at a store. Uh-huh. And they're like, that's amazing. I hope you buy it. And I tell them like a crazy price and they just send me the money. It really is so different. You have no, you don't really know who you're or what you're getting into. It's like a surprise, just like this, where she just randomly receives 200,000 yen. You get surprised.
Yeah. It's a range of experiences.
Yeah. I may not have answered your question, but do what you want with all that word salad.
I always do. But so did you read, so you said you read this when you were in high school and then you just read it. Those situations, did you read them differently having had relatable experiences?
Yeah. I looked at her and I was just like, oh my God, she's so me. Hilarious. And then I move on and I'm reading and it's just like another girl just like me. But when I was reading it in high school, I was like, I was relating more to who she was as like a person, so aloof when everything else is so bad, because even before I was a sugar baby, I have always loved comedy. And I was just talking about this to a person, like to a person, not to the walls or anything, but of course I was talking to a person. I was saying that in high school, I was depressed, but I knew like one thing, it was that I was hot. So, yeah, I had no confidence in anything. I didn't want to do anything. Art sometimes was a miss for me, but if I could rely on one thing, it was that I was hot and I can do something with that, you know? So her just walking around like, yeah, I'm hot, whatever, who cares? And her life, it could be going like a complete fucking mess, but she's somehow staying afloat because she knows that she's pretty. I was like, that's me. So it was interesting to find content in literature that was so unhinged and so mean. Cause I was like, oh, maybe there's other people like me. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's interesting too, when you talk about it in terms of like a power dynamic, like you're talking about being young and hot, and then you're talking about being in this room with a politician, right? Who's on paper, like a powerful person. Like, what do you feel the power dynamic is in that room?
I think it's interesting. Like maybe people could possibly judge this girl, right? Cause she's on the train and Cole, who's just telling her like, oh, maybe you should get married or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then she starts judging other people. But what does he know about how much, you know, he needs her? And how much does she need him, right? I mean, if you really consider it, did I need the politician? There's a bunch of them out there. Are there a lot of hot, exotic young women like me in the world? Good luck finding them. Yeah, sure, they're out there. But regardless, I think that I knew I had power in the room because firstly, he kind of sounded stupid to me. and I was surprised that this guy could have power over, you know, a lot of people and money. So I felt just like very observant and not out of place, but just like existentially like, wow, how did I end up here? This is interesting. Like, what's this? You know, just flipping things over. And yeah, I don't know. I had the freedom to explore what I wanted quietly, and I didn't have to do anything. I was just appreciated for existing.
That sounds nice.
Right. So, can we just move that into the art world somehow?
I know. Right. Right. Yes. I know. Right. Yes. Okay. So she meets our main character protagonist meets the young man who's, she says, I'm your sugar mom's daughter. Right. So they meet each other. And there's not much to it other than them having an initial meeting. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes an impression on him. That's chapter 3. So then chapter 4, some of these are kind of smaller stories too, right? Like sometimes there's a big plot point that happens, and then sometimes it's more like a kind of more meditative, like we just sit with the characters. And that's what this fourth one is, right? It's sort of just developing the relationship between the stepmom's sugar, what is he called? The sugar, is he also sugar baby?
Sugar baby. Yeah.
And then the protagonist, and he also meets the daughter, the stepmom's biological daughter. And it's just the three of them in an apartment with the alligator, basically, right?
Yeah.
So it's just sort of building dynamics between characters, and we're getting to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, right, and then chapter 5, we get into that he's an aspiring novelist, right? That becomes his sort of motivation, his character. Mm-hmm. And then they challenge him to do some writing. And they give him a hard time a little bit.
Yeah.
And
he's like a crocodile.
Yeah. And then he gets a fever from them making him. He has to stand on the table in his underwear and write for a long time. So he gets sick. And then the stepsister goes out to get him, what, medicine or something? It's basically just an excuse to get the main character and him alone together, right? And then there's like a budding romance between them, which I'm guessing is sort of like a larger thrust to the story.
Mm-hmm. And I will do my best to not spoil.
I know. Don't tell me what happens at the end. You already gave
I'm a mess. Away. You're talking with the worst person.
Just period in the world.
You got it.
Wow. I should have put that in your intro. Zena Lopez is the worst person. No, so chapter 6, moving right along. I like this line, books are for sad losers who can't get laid. That's a really good, very true statement. So I had a little trouble with this because then he's at his school and he's talking to one of his classmates, but I was a little confused by her because
his girlfriend, I think.
Okay, yeah, but she was... maybe I'm just a bad reader, but her design is a little bit similar to the daughter of the stepmom. And there haven't been a lot of character. They basically both just have dark hair. So I was just a little confused that she was a new character, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is maybe
you were reading this fast.
Maybe that's all, as I was just reading it. I was reading it late at night. I don't know. So, or maybe I'm just not a very smart person and I shouldn't have, but so then we see the daughter and the male sugar baby are getting together. Everyone's just basically getting to know each other. And then the main character has another date. We see another one with an older guy. What'd you make of this whole sequence?
I thought it was very silly. Especially because she like pulls out this book because he can't seem to get a boner.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, my pecker's done for. You're superb, but it's no use. And he's so sad. He's like, don't worry. I want, what does she say? She says, I want you to fuck one last time, Grandpa. And she's crying and holding her cheeks and her tears.
It's touching.
Yeah, how touching, right? And so he just gives her a plum seed. and then steals all her stuff.
Well, so he gives her the plum seed and he says, any wish you make out loud the moment the flower blooms will be granted without fail.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then she takes a shower and he steals all her stuff, which is kind of odd.
Yeah, and then jets. So she's left alone with just seed and nothing else.
But then she goes back and the male sugar baby and the stepmom's daughter are both in her apartment. Everyone's just kind of hanging out in her apartment all the time now. And they plant the seed and then it blooms immediately. And none of them make a wish out loud though, right?
Except for Hotaro.
Is that the guy?
He says that he wants to be a proper and great novelist.
Is he saying it out loud though, or is he just thinking it?
It looks
like a thought balloon to me. It's a little vague though.
I don't know, because here it says wishes, right? And it's also in the same kind of shaped balloon.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It could be. He probably said it out loud because he's kind of a dork character. And then he asked, like, did you guys make your wishes? And they're both like, totally.
But so, he had said they had to make them out loud, so.
The guy? The old man?
Yeah, when he gives her the seed, he says you have to make the wish out loud for it to come true.
Oh, I missed that.
Well, I was reading it very carefully with great attention. So,
oh my God.
But anyway, yeah, and then they all go to sleep. They're just all sleeping in a bed together in her apartment. There's not really like a love triangle happening though, right? Because the stepmom's daughter is, I think, quite a bit younger than them, I think, right?
Yeah. No, she's just, they're all sleeping together as like a comfortable little family almost. I think that's what the image is supposed to be, that these three have decided to start hanging out together, like a secret little pact of friends. And you're right. It does say that you had to make the wish out loud. My God. Ooh,
well,
I missed that.
It seems like a missed opportunity is kind of what they're saying. Like she got this gift, this magical gift, but she doesn't make a wish on. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. It's a weird piece of storytelling.
Right? Yeah, like this guy just randomly took it from her.
He steals all her stuff, but he gives her a magic wish and then she doesn't make the wish. So yeah. So then the next chapter 7 is another sort of just moment. So she goes out to sing karaoke, right? She's just having a night out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is at her apartment where he's a lot. Oh, and then his, I guess, girlfriend comes in.
Yeah.
And then he's taking care of this.
Yeah,
alligator.
She's already there. She's waiting for him.
Right. And then she wants to, yeah, she wants to have sex with him in the apartment.
Not quite. Like she stayed in there. She snuck in, cooked him food and stuff. And he's like, I'm just here to change. And then he dips out. But she follows him to Yumi's apartment where the crocodile is.
Got it.
And they, yeah.
And then she says, do me, which is a beautiful phrase. And then I like the part where Yumi, they're watching the stars and they're talking about the atmosphere. The sky's been clear because of freon gases. The ozone layer is being destroyed so much the air is getting. It's just an interesting kind of introspective exchange. I kind of liked that. Yeah. So then he has sex with her in the apartment. And then she sees the alligator and she faints.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's unconscious. She's unconscious for a really long time. It's like the whole next chapter. I was actually confused by the next chapter because she's. So then Yumi comes home. She's mad that she's there, right?
Yeah.
And then they're basically just talking about what to do with her the whole time, right? And she wants to feed her to the alligator.
Mm-hmm.
Which.
I thought that it was really cool how she was like, I just don't like her face. She seems confident and haughty. And I just don't like her. You don't want, or erase Croc from her memory because you don't want someone you hate to know something that's dear to you. Right? So, yeah, he has to figure out a way to get that girl out of the apartment and just erase the whole crocodile thing from her memory. Which he does by just placing a couple of bottles around, and then he wakes up in his apartment. And it's so funny. Yumi's like, don't you have any ideas on how to do this? Because you're a writer. And he's just like, okay. And so he drags her out, brings her to the apartment, puts some bottles around the house. And he's like, I'll just tell her it was all a dream. And he looks down and he's like, maybe I am such a horrible novelist. Just a dream. I sucked. And he's so sad about his life.
Yeah, he's kind of a mopey character, right?
Yeah. He's such a tortured guy. And meanwhile, when she was going through this despair of finding another woman in her apartment and not knowing what to do, she's like, I'm just going to paint my nails. And then she touches herself and just kind of walks through her day until bedtime.
And that's yeah, she has sort of a more mundane experience. She seems pretty grounded after that whole exchange.
Yeah.
So then chapter 9, we're almost to the end. The girlfriend wakes up in his apartment. And then, then he has another date with his sugar mama, right?
The sugar mama calls and the girl who saw the crocodile answers the phone.
That's right.
So the sugar mama is getting kind of jealous. And she's like, is that another young woman? They're probably laughing about me. And she's getting all like caught up on how Haruo was telling her, like, I love you, miss. And she's like, oh, he didn't mean that. He's so transparent. I don't even believe him.
And then she's giving her own daughter this whole spiel, right? Like, you need to be gorgeous and luxurious to attract rich guys, become happy like mommy. And that's kind of, what do you make of that dynamic?
What to make of it is what the daughter just says next. She's like, I can't believe how stupid my mom is. It's such a pain. And then she goes to her sister's house where Yumi has now made her apartment in like a jungle for the crocodile. And she's like, my God, all the women in my life are fucking idiots.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was really silly. This poor girl is probably the most stable of the women in this comic. Not really. She's a kid too. But she's not as stupid. She's just like, the mom is so dumb. She's so caught up in all her materialism. And Yumi is caught up in just being pretty and ignoring, or not ignoring. I don't really know what's going on with her, but she's just not really able to register how dark a lot of stuff is, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And then the toilet overflows and then the lights go out. So then the apartment floods and then she gets evicted.
Yeah.
And then the guy, Sugar Baby, invites her to come stay with her.
And it's him,
which seems like a plot point that will have repercussions, right?
Mm-hmm. And so it kind of shows in chapter 10, right? Because, he invites her over and she's like, I love you, Haruo. Like, wow. So now there's this feeling of like, ooh, they're together. And the whole chapter 10 is how she's playing housewife in his home. But it ends with her saying that she just managed to get a ton of clients and she's holding all these bags of clothes.
Yeah, it's interesting because they hook up, right? She's living with him and then she has this whole sort of like housewife fantasy kind of thing for part of the day, right? She's sort of like imagining this life where she makes him breakfast and she hangs out and does house stuff. And then and he's thinking about his feelings for her. And then but then there's a turn where then she's wanting material things and wanting to have her own career, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where our reading ends, or my reading at least. I wonder what's going to happen next. I have no idea.
I didn't spoil it. Yay. I deserve all the rewards.
Well, I don't know what that would be. You get to be on a podcast is what everybody aspires to do.
So happy.
Yeah. That brings us to the end of this first half we read. So it's not a long series. We're halfway through it. Mm-hmm. And so that brings us to the end of the first half. Do you have any other kind of overview comments or evaluations or anything?
Well, if we're talking about how chapter 10 went, maybe now that we have like a lot more background on the characters and stuff, the writer has a really heavy way of just making up this fantasy thing and then just dropping it right down to the cruel reality of the whole situation.
Yeah.
So if you get caught up in thinking that this is some nice story, you're right back to square one where it's not that.
Yeah, it's got an interesting kind of vibe. The whole vibe, I like the vibe of it, I would say. Like, it reads well. It kind of puts you in this world and this mindset really well, I would say. And that's, you know, I think comics can do because it's writing and it's drawn. So it really has like a encompassing aesthetic. And this, I think, does that really well. It sort of puts you in this scenario and it makes you relate to the characters both in their actions and their thoughts and also the way they're drawn.
Did you like this book or no?
I liked it a lot. Yeah, no, I really I would look forward to reading the rest of it and seeing what happens. And it felt kind of special. Like, it felt like something I hadn't seen before. And it felt like a deep cut a little bit too. Is this thing popular or like I'd never heard of this before you suggested it?
I have no idea if it's popular or not. Sure. It just stumbled upon me one day while I was at like the circulation desk and processing a bunch of books. I got lucky. I often get lucky, but then again, I do work in a library, so I see books all the time.
There you go. Yeah. So many books have crossed your desk.
Yeah.
So yeah, what was your point though about whether or not I liked it?
Because if you didn't like it, then you really wouldn't know how to relate to the book in any way. You wouldn't have absorbed it. So then it wouldn't really make sense to talk about it. Right?
Well, I've done a few of these where I didn't like the thing we read. And, you know, I always feel like I sound like a curmudgeon when that happens. But I think that's interesting, too. I mean, it's just to kind of critique a thing. I mean, I guess this is a little bit of a nostalgia show and like it's about talking with people about runs of comics they liked, you know, so it doesn't sync up as well when I don't like the thing. But I'm always interested just in like why people picked things or how people read things, you know, like you're a comics artist. That's the other thing, right? The first time you read this, you had done a lot less work in comics. Like, did you read it any differently in terms of how it was laid out or the storytelling or anything like that?
You mean after I've established myself a little bit?
Well, you said you first read it like 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So you've had a lot of life experiences since then and created a body of work since then. So life experiences, including kind of learning more about making comics. So as a work in comics, did you read it differently than you had previously?
Maybe. I'm not too sure. All I know is that I wish I had a better answer that would be more descriptive or something, but every time I enjoy something, I'm just so engrossed in it. That's not descriptive for anybody listening to this, right? I was a different person 10 years ago, and I was really disliking how kind of independent and weird and silly she was. It was like I was reading about this other really interesting woman, and I come back to it years later, and it turns out I'm actually a lot like her. So now reading it again, I think it's funny. Like, I'm finding myself in an old photograph and I'm like, that's me. What was I even doing back then? And it's cool. I'm still observing another person, even though it's just part of me.
I'm working on unpacking that. That was a lot. That was a dense statement.
Sorry.
No, it's good. I support it. So we would both recommend this to other people. This is a good comic book.
Yes.
And yeah, if and when I do a season 3, I'll invite you back and we'll finish this run. which is most runs are longer than this. So this is an easier one. I've noticed that too, just in general. I have to read a lot of stuff to do this podcast. And whenever someone knows manga, it's a little bit of a break. Manga usually reads faster than a lot of other comics. So
yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So before we wrap up, I have a few questions. So do you have, as a comics creator, do you have like a dream run? Like I could, usually it's like, you know, like people go, oh, I want to write Batman or whatever, but I don't know if you have any interest in writing Batman or if you have like a personal project, but what would your dream run be?
Man, hearing that makes me wish I was normal. I don't want to write Batman, honestly.
I don't think wanting to write Batman makes you normal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. I think I want to do more memoir things, but not just myself. So I've just been writing about me, right? Because I know myself best. And I do my best to just be honest and make sure that my stories aren't sad, that it's not just like me moping about my life. I'm actually getting to something that can be used for others on their own path that might be able to fuck my life. God damn it. Hold on. Let me re-say all that. If something in my life was relatable and it's weird and it's niche, and someone can take this information and use it in a positive way, that's the kind of thing I'd like to produce a lot of in this world. Mm-hmm. And I'm so far doing that with my own life, right? Because I have a lot of stuff happening every day and I'm able to write another book now because of that. But maybe in the future, if people like me enough, then it would be interesting to hear other people's stories and then translate them into comics as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just a ton of people. And that's a never ending series because a lot of people get a lot of problems.
Yeah. I've always liked that idea too. I've always kind of wanted to do something like This American Life, but in comics or something, you know, like really get people's stories and translate them into comics. So,
yeah. Have you read the book? You know, honestly, if it wasn't this book right here, I would have recommended Seek You.
Oh, I haven't read that. That was, I think, the Believer editor made that. Yeah.
Yeah. A Journey Through American Loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that comic so much.
Okay.
And I also listened to it in audiobook, which was equally delicious.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll put it on my list of things to read. It's a very long list.
Maybe it could just be the audiobook.
I'll put it on my list of things to listen to.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And then Zena Lopez, I find you fascinating and compelling. If I were a listener and I wanted to follow your work online or something, how might I do that?
Instagram at Zena Lopez Art.
And that's it'll your name will be spelled in the thing, but X-E-N-A. L-O-P-E-Z, right? Spelled like it sounds?
Yeah. Art. Right.
Art. Is there an underscore or anything? Or can I just write all one word?
All one word, all lowercase.
All right. Sounds good. Well, cool. I think that wraps things up. Thanks very much for doing this show. It was a pleasure talking to you. And thanks for getting me to read something I probably would not have read otherwise.
Yep. It has been an honor. Thank you.
All right, that brings another episode of The Runs to a close. Thanks for listening. Zena Lopez is quite an interesting person, a strange human. I liked her insight on this comic book, and I like to get to read something I hadn't read. I feel old talking to someone who's younger than me, as I guess makes sense. I think it's interesting, too, like that I don't know if this will keep out. I don't know a lot of people much younger than me, but it seems like probably more younger people on the show will be more manga, probably, right? And then, like, middle-aged guys talking about Marvel Comics. That's funny to me. Anyway, thanks for listening. Please rate and review us on all the social things, Spotify and iTunes. Subscribe, like, rate and review. You can stream the show on the runspodcast.blogspot.com. You can tell your friends about it. I feel like probably you can't not tell your friends about it. How do you resist doing such a thing? If you want to drop me a line, you can do so at ohyesverynice@gmail.com. ohyesverynice@gmail.com. It's also my website if you want to see my little drawings. We'll be back next week with another discussion of a run. Hope to see you then.